Okay. Jayaratamadhava. Jayat Kunjabhihavi. Jayaratamadhava. Jayat Kunjabhihavi. Gopi Janap. Malabha Jaya Kiri Badudhavi Jaya Kiri Badudhavi Gopi Chana Balab Ma Jaya Kiri Badudhavi Jaya Kiri Badudhavi Yasoda Nandana Jaya Vrajajana Ranjana Yasoda Nandana Jaya Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tirap Manachari Jaya Kunjabi Hari Jaya Kunjabi Yamuna Tirap Manachari Jaya Kunjabi Hari Jaya Kunjabi Hari Jaya Ranmadava Jaya Kunjabi Hari
I own Vishnu Pad, Paramahansa, Paravidikacharya, all Sutadas and Tashi, Shimad, His Divine Grace Abhaya, Chalanata Bhaktivananda Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Anantakoti Vaishnav Vrindi Ki Jai, Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, for the sake of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda Sidwaita Gadadha, Shiva Siddhi Gaur Bhakta Vrindi Ki Jai, Sri Sri Radhakrishna Gopikopinath, Sayam Kunda, Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavanam Ki Jai, Maturam Ki Jai, Jagrata Sami Kajai, Yamunamai Kajai, Shimadi Lasi Devi Kajai, Sambhaveda Bhakta, Vrinda Kajai, Gaur Brahmananda Hari Hari Om. All glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is the assembled devotees, all glory is to Shri Guru and Gauranga, Srila Prabhupada Kajai, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya, Bhutale, Shimati Bhakta Vedanta Swamini, Namini, Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesha Shunyavani Pashat Deshatari. I'm going to read the translation of Jai Radha Madhava. Lord Madhava Krishna is the lover of Srimati Radha, and he displays many amorous pastimes in the groves of Vrindavan. That's Kunjari Hari. He is the darling of the gopis and the lifter of Govardhan Hill. Beloved son of Yashoda, he is the light of the inhabitants of Braja, and he wanders the Yamuna riverbank forests. So, of course, Srila Prabhupada was very fond of chanting this song. Before every class, he would chant this song. And he said, everything is there in this song. All the forests of Vrindavan, Krishna, the gopis, everything in the spiritual world is there. And when you chant it with attention, you will actually enter into the pastimes of Krishna. So, with that happy note, Om Ganata Midandasha Garanjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master, Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, who so kindly opened my eyes with a torchlight of knowledge while I was blinded in the darkness of ignorance. So, let's continue with our study of Krishna book. And we are on chapter 16, moving very quickly through Krishna book. And chapter 16 is also one of my favorite. Of course, every chapter is my favorite. And chapter 16 is called Subduing Kaliya. Of course, Kaliya, the Kaliya serpent. And the Kaliya serpent was saved by his wives, the Naga Putnis. Nagapad, the word Nagapadni means the wives of the snake. Okay. So, in the previous chapter, we found that Krishna found the coward boys had drunk the water, and some of the cows or calves had drunk the water, and they had gone unconscious, and Krishna brought them back to consciousness. So now Krishna's going to do something about it. So when Krishna understood that the water of the Yamuna was being polluted by the black serpent, Kaliya, Lord Krishna took action against him and made him leave the Yamuna and go elsewhere, and thus the water became purified. When this story was being narrated by Shukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Pariksit became eager to hear more about Krishna's childhood pastimes. He inquired from Shukadeva Goswami how Krishna chastised Kaliya, who had been living in the water for many years. Actually, Maharaj Pariksit was becoming more and more enthusiastic to hear the transcendental pastimes of Krishna, and his inquiry was made with great interest. Now, try to understand. Pariksit Maharaj has been fasting practically, at this point, probably about 4 days into the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the 10th canto is the largest part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, so maybe 3 or 4 days into the Srimad Bhagavatam. He's been fasting. And he's getting more and more enthusiastic. Now, what do we experience when we're fasting is that we get less and less enthusiastic. Like Srila Prabhupada, when we were reading Krishna book to him on Janmashtami night, he was getting more and more and more energetic, and the rest of us were getting more and more and more de-energized. And then Prabhupada finally looked up and said to us, Okay, we can stop here. And then everybody was so enthusiastic because they wanted to eat prasadam. Shukadeva Goswami narrated the story as follows. Within the river Yamuna, there was a great lake, and in that lake, the black serpent Kaliya used to live. Because of his poison, the whole area was contaminated, so contaminated that it emanated a poisonous vapor 24 hours a day. If a bird happened to even pass over the spot, it would immediately die and fall down into the water. Due to the poisonous effect of the Yamuna's vapors, the trees and grass near the bank of Yamuna had all dried up. Lord Krishna saw the effect of the great serpent's poison. The whole river that ran before Vrindavan was now deadly. Krishna, who advented himself just to kill all undesirable elements of the world, immediately climbed up into a big kadamba tree on the bank of the Yamuna. The kadamba is a tree bearing round yellow flowers that is generally seen only in the Vrindavan area. After climbing to the top of the tree, he tightened his belt cloth and, slapping his arms just like a wrestler, jumped into the mist of the poisonous lake. The kadamba tree from which Krishna jumped was the only tree there which was not dead. Some commentators say that due to being touched by the lotus feet of Krishna, the tree immediately became alive, and some other Puranas have stated that Garuda, the eternal carrier of Vishnu, knew that Krishna would take this action in the future, and so he put some nectar, that's the amrit, on this tree to preserve it. When Lord Krishna jumped into the water, the river overflooded its banks to a distance of 100 yards, as if something very large had fallen into it. This exhibition of Krishna's strength is not at all uncommon, because he is the reservoir of all strength. And of course, as Bhagavan, he has unlimited strength. When Krishna was swimming about just like a great, strong elephant, he made a tumultuous sound which the great black serpent Kaliya could hear. The tumult was intolerable for him, and he could understand that this was an attempt to attack his home. Therefore, he immediately came before Krishna. Kaliya saw that Krishna was indeed worth seeing because his body was so beautiful and delicate. Its color resembled that of a cloud, and his feet resembled lotus flowers. He was decorated with Srivatsa jewels and yellow garments. He was smiling with a beautiful face and playing in the river Yamuna with great strength. But in spite of Krishna's beautiful features, Kaliya felt great anger within his heart, and thus he grabbed Krishna with his mighty coils. Seeing the incredible way in which Krishna was enveloped in the coils of the serpent, the affectionate coward boys and other inhabitants of Vrindavan immediately became stunned out of fear. They had dedicated everything to Krishna. Their lives, property, affection, activities, everything was for Krishna. And when they saw him in that condition, they became overwhelmed with fear and fell down on the ground. All the cows, bulls, and small calves became overwhelmed with grief, and they began to look at him with great anxiety. Out of fear, they can only cry in agony and stand erect on the bank, unable to help their beloved Krishna. While this scene was taking place on the bank of the Yamuna, there were ill omens manifest. The earth trembled, meteors fell from the sky, and the left side of the men's bodies shivered. All these are indications of great immediate danger. Observing the inauspicious signs, the coward men, including Maharaj Nanda, became very anxious out of fear. At the same time, they were informed that Krishna had gone to the pasturing ground without his elder brother Balaram. As soon as Nanda and Yashoda, the coward men, heard this news, they became even more anxious. Out of their great affection for Krishna and being unaware of the extent of his potencies, they became overwhelmed with grief and anxiety because they had nothing dearer than Krishna and because they had dedicated their everything, life, property, affection, mind, and activities to Krishna. Because of their great attachment for Krishna, they thought, today Krishna is surely going to be vanquished. I mean, we're reading about their anxiety, we're reading about this, but you really can't fully understand the depths of their despair. We just can't understand that because we don't have that same sort of love. It's just like so deep. I mean, it's just like their life air is being ripped from their body, basically. All the inhabitants of Vrindavan came out of the village to see Krishna. The assembly consisted of children, old men, women, animals, and other living entities. They knew that Krishna was their only means of sustenance. While this was happening, Balaram, who was the master of all knowledge, stood there simply smiling. He knew how powerful his younger brother was and that there was no cause for anxiety when Krishna was fighting with an ordinary serpent of the material world. He did not, therefore, personally take any part in their sorrow. Actually, the interesting thing is, Balaram, or the expansion of Balaram, is the original serpent. That's Anantashesh. It's interesting. So it's actually expansion or a reflection of the spiritual serpents. On the other hand, in other words, there's serpents in the spiritual world, but they're not dangerous. On the other hand, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, being disturbed, began to search out Krishna by following the impression of his footprints on the ground, and thus they moved hastily toward the bank of the Yamuna. Finally, by following the footprints marked with flag, bow, and concho, the inhabitants of Vrindavan arrived at the riverbank and saw that all the cows and boys were weeping to behold Krishna enwrapped in the coils of the black serpent. Then they became still more overwhelmed with grief. While Balaram was smiling to see their lamentation, all the inhabitants of Brajabhumi merged into the ocean of grief because they thought that Krishna was finished. Although the residents of Vrindavan did not know much about Krishna, their love for him was beyond comparison. As soon as they saw that Krishna was in the river Yamuna, enveloped by the serpent Kaliya, and that all the cows and boys and cows were lamenting, they simply began to think of Krishna's friendship, his smiling face, his sweet words, and his dealings with them. Thinking of all these and seeing that their Krishna was now within the clutches of Kaliya, they at once felt that the three worlds had become vacant. Lord Chaitanya also said that he was seeing the three worlds as vacant for want of Krishna. This is the highest stage of Krishna consciousness. Almost all of the inhabitants of Vrindavan had the highest ecstatic love for Krishna. I mean, this is really how one experiences things even in this material world. If your loved one is in danger, you actually think about things you did with them before, you know, your past. You know, I remember when my mother was getting ready to pass away, I was actually just thinking, you know, my childhood and all the different interactions I had with her. And, you know, you just like, it's like goes flashing through your mind. It's a, you know, it's like flashback, but it goes flashing through your mind. All, you know, so many different experiences you had with the person. So this is really what's happening. You know, trying to understand the depths, again, I'm making that point, the depths of emotion that the residents of Vrindavan are feeling. When Mother Yashoda arrived, she wanted to enter the river Yamuna, and being checked, she fainted. Her friends, who were equally aggrieved, were shedding tears like torrents of rain or waves of the river, but in order to bring Mother Yashoda to consciousness, they began to speak loudly about the transcendental pastimes of Krishna. Mother Yashoda remained still, as if dead, because her consciousness was concentrated on the face of Krishna. Nanda and all the other coward men who had dedicated everything, including their lives, to Krishna were ready to enter the waters of the Yamuna. But Lord Balaram checked them because he was in perfect knowledge that there was no danger. So they're watching Krishna. Just understand the scenario. Krishna is enveloped by the coils of this serpent, and it looks like he's being choked. I mean, as you can imagine, a python. You know, a python is an animal that chokes its prey to death. It just goes around, its muscles are very strong, it just chokes, and then it swallows the prey whole. Basically, a python has certain jaws where the hinge can actually be opened up. And it can swallow something bigger than, almost bigger than itself. So this is really what they were seeing, and that went on, according to Srila Prabhupada here. He says, for 2 hours. It's not just like, oh, a few minutes, you know. Okay, Krishna, save yourself. Oh, Krishna, free yourself. For 2 hours. And those 2 hours felt like 2 million years for the residents of Vrindavan. For 2 hours. Remember, 2 hours. when something's really miserable like that, the time it spans, so it seems like, oh my God, you know, just like intense emotion for 2 hours. I mean, with material bodies, we would not be able to tolerate those emotions without dying. So just, you know, envision what's happening here. For 2 hours, Krishna remained like an ordinary child gripped in the coils of Kaliya. But when he saw that all the inhabitants of Gokula, including his mother and father, the gopis, the boys, and the cows, were just on the point of death, and they had no shelter for salvation from imminent death, Krishna immediately freed himself. 2 hours. In the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we actually have this story depicted a slightly different way, where Balaram actually almost chastises Krishna and says, Krishna, these are not just your ordinary devotees in Vaikuntha and everything, that, you know, they're going to die. You know, free yourself. So Balaram actually convinces Krishna to do that. This is from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. He began to expand his body, and when the serpent tried to hold him, he felt a great strain. On account of the strain, his coils slackened, and he had no alternative but to let loose the personality of Godhead Krishna from his grasp. Kaliya then became very angry, and his great hoods expanded. He exhaled poisonous fumes from his nostrils. His eyes blazed like fire, and flames issued from his mouth. Like a dragon. The great serpent remained still for some time, looking at Krishna, licking his lips with bifurcated tongues. That means the tongue is actually in two parts. And snakes sometimes have bifurcated tongues. That means the end of the tongue makes like a V. There's two like endings to the tongue. The serpent looked at Krishna with double hoods. And his eyesight was full of poison. Krishna immediately pounced upon him, just as Garuda swoops upon a snake. Thus attacked, Kaliya looked for an opportunity to bite him, but Krishna moved around him. As Krishna and Kaliya moved in a circle, the serpent gradually became fatigued, and his strength seemed to diminish considerably. Krishna immediately pressed down the serpent's hoods and jumped upon them. The Lord's lotus feet began tinged with red from the rays of the jewels on the snake's hood. Then he, who was the original artist of all fine arts, such as dancing, began to dance upon the hoods of the serpent, although they were moving to and fro. Upon seeing this, the denizens of the upper planet showered flowers, beat drums, played different types of flutes, and sang various prayers and songs. In this way, all the denizens of heaven, such as the Gandharvas, Siddhas, and demigods, became very much pleased. Now, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, there's a different description of this story as it occurs in the spiritual world, that Krishna reached out and he grabbed the gopis who were getting ready to enter the river, and he put them on different heads of the serpent along with himself, because he expanded himself too, and he had a dance with the gopis, and everybody was watching him dance on the heads of the serpent with the gopis. And that's in the spiritual world. That's interesting, like all the rasas were present simultaneously. When Krishna was dancing on his hoods, Kaliya tried to push him down with some of his other hoods. Kaliya had about 100 hoods, but Krishna took control of them. He began to dash Kaliya with his lotus feet, and this was more than the serpent could bear. Gradually, Kaliya was reduced to struggling for his very life. He vomited all kinds of refuse and exhaled fire. Exhaled fire. While throwing up poisonous material from within, Kaliya became reduced in his sinful situation. Out of great anger, he began to struggle for existence and tried to raise one of his hoods to kill the Lord. The Lord immediately captured that hood and subdued it by kicking it and dancing on it. It actually appeared as if the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu was being worshipped. The poisons emanating from the mouth of the serpent appeared to be like flower offerings. Kaliya then began to vomit blood instead of poison. He was completely fatigued. His whole body appeared to be broken by the kicks of the Lord. Within his mind, however, he finally began to understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he surrendered unto him. He realized that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the master of everything. Now, here comes the wives, who are good devotees, and they saved their husband. the wives of the serpent, known as the Nagapatnis, saw that their husband had been subdued by the Lord's clicking, that he was almost at the point of death due to bearing the heavy burden of the Lord, within whose abdomen the whole universe remains. Kaliya's wives prepared to worship the Lord, and in their haste, their clothes, hair, and ornaments became disarrayed. They also surrendered unto the Supreme Lord and began to pray. They appeared before him, but for their offspring, and anxiously offered respectful obeisances. Offspring means children, so they're little baby nagas. And Prabhupada said that the Nagapatnis look like something like mermaids. I think you all understand what a mermaid is. They have like a fish bottom and a regular human top. Falling down on the bank, and also these nagas, another point is, these nagas could change forms, too. I mean, they could look like a human being sometimes, or they could look like a snake sometimes, or half human, half snake, or half fish, half human, whatever. You know, they were not ordinary, or are not ordinary living entities. Falling down on the bank of the Yamuna, Nagapatnis knew that Krishna is the shelter of all surrendered souls, and they decided to release their husband from the impending danger by pleasing the Lord with their prayers. And now we're going to hear the prayers by the Nagapatnis. The Nagapatnis began to offer their prayers as follows. O dear Lord, you are equal to everyone. For you there is no distinction between your sons, friends, or enemies. Therefore, the punishment which you have so kindly offered to Kaliya is exactly befitting. So equality means, as you approach Krishna, he reciprocates with you. Everybody has an equal right to Krishna's mercy. No one gets special mercy. People accept more mercy. Therefore, they get special mercy. But everybody has the opportunity. Krishna says that in the Gita. Samoham sarvabhuteshu name dvisho stinapriha. O Lord, you have descended especially for the purpose of annihilating all kinds of disturbing elements within the world, and because you are the absolute truth, there is no difference between your mercy and punishment. We think, therefore, that this apparent punishment of Kaliya is actually some benediction. We consider that your punishment is your great mercy upon us, because when you punish someone, it is to be understood that the reactions of his sinful activities are eradicated. It is already clear that this creature appearing in the body of a serpent must have been overburdened with all kinds of sin. Otherwise, how could he have the body of a serpent? Your dancing on his hoods has reduced all the sinful results of actions caused by his having this body of a serpent. It is therefore very auspicious that you have become angry and have punished him in this way. We are very much astonished to see how you have become so much pleased with this serpent, who evidently performed various religious activities in his past lives that pleased everyone. He must have undergone all kinds of penances and austerities, humbly honored others, and executed universal welfare activities for all living entities. The Nagapatnis confirm that one cannot come in contact with Krishna without having executed pious activities and devotional service in his previous lives. So one may say, does that mean the only people we can bring to Krishna consciousness are people in their previous lives who have been devotees or seen Krishna or come in contact? Not necessarily, because there's a shortcut, and that shortcut is called sadhu sangha. If one has the association of a devotee like His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, then no matter what one's background is, it does not matter. It does not matter. Just like Narada Muni. What did he do? He saved Vibrari, the hunter. So many stories like that. Haridas Thakur, the prostitute. As Lord Chaitanya advised in the Shikshashtika, one has to execute devotional service by humbly chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street and not expecting honor for himself, but offering all kinds of honor to others. The Nagapatnis were astonished that although Kaliya had the body of a serpent, as the result of grievous sinful activities, at the same time he was in contact with the Lord to the extent that the Lord's lotus feet were touching his hoods, a blessing that must certainly have been the result of extraordinary pious activities. Now, so we find in the case of these demons and they had been introduced, it took the form of demons. They had some contact before and blessings from a pure devotee. There's the background story for each and every one of these personalities who attacked Krishna. And the reason they actually got it, and the reason is because of some cursing / benediction of a sage, like Manigriva Nalakuvara. They got the curse / blessing of Narada Muni. So by the blessings, or even the curse, of a pure devotee, one gets Krishna. These two contradictory facts astonish them. They continue to pray, "O dear Lord, we are simply astonished to see that he is so fortunate as to have the dust of your lotus feet on his head. This is a fortune sought after by great saintly persons. Even the goddess of fortune underwent severe austerities just to have the blessing of the dust of your lotus feet." So how is it that Kaliya is so easily getting this dust on his head? "We have heard from authoritative sources that those who are blessed with the dust of your lotus feet do not care even for the highest post within the universe, namely the post of Lord Brahma, or the kingship of the heavenly planets, or the sovereignty of this planet. Nor do such persons desire to rule the planets above this earth, such as Siddhaloka, nor do they aspire for the mystic powers achieved by yoga process. Nor do the pure devotees aspire for liberation by becoming one with you. My Lord, although he is born in a species of life which is fostered by the most abominable mode of material nature, accompanied with the quality of anger, this king of serpents has achieved something very, very rare. Living entities who are wandering within this universe in different species of life can very easily achieve the greatest benediction only by your mercy." You see how intelligent these Nagapatnis were? In fact, we see that they were more intelligent than their husband, the Naga. That's Kaliya. So they're saving their husband. So they're like the gurus of their husband. And they're snakes. So doesn't that show that bodily distinction or bodily form has nothing to do with spiritual knowledge or being instructors in Krishna consciousness or being initiators in Krishna consciousness or giving people Krishna consciousness? Has nothing to do with it. It's a product of the soul, an activity of the soul, Krishna consciousness. It is confirmed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the living entities wandering within the universe in various species of life can get the seed of devotional service here at the point by the mercy of Krishna and the spiritual master, and thus their path of liberation can be cleared. Of course, that's that famous verse, Brahmanda Brahmataya Kona Bhagyuan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Bhis. The living entities wandering throughout all the universes, but by the mercy of Krishna he gets Guru, and the Guru gives him the seed of the creeper of devotion. Okay. The Nagapatis continued, "We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto you, our dear Lord, because you are the supreme person who are living as the super soul within every living entity. Although you are transcendental to the cosmic manifestation, everything is resting in you. You are the personified, indefatigable, eternal time. The entire time force is existing in you, and you are therefore the seer and the embodiment of total time in the shape of past, present, and future, month, day, hour, moment, everything." Wow. How do you understand that? Inconceivable. In other words, O Lord, you can see perfectly all the activities happening at every moment, and every hour, and every day, and every month, and every year, past, present, and future. You are yourself the universal form, and yet you are different from this universe. You are simultaneously one with and different from the universe. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto you. So that's a chinja veda veda tatva. And that was understood by these Nagapatnis. You are yourself the whole universe, and yet you are the creator of the whole universe. You are the superintendent and maintainer of this whole universe, and you are its original cause. Although you are present within this universe by your three qualities, qualitative incarnations, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, that's Lord Shiva, you are transcendental to the material creation. Although you are the cause of the appearance of all kinds of living entities, their senses, their lives, their minds, their intelligence, you are to be realized by your internal energy. In other words, you can't be realized by the mundane senses mind, and intelligence can only be realized when you reveal yourself. In other words, the ascending process doesn't work. Let us therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto you who are unlimited, finer than the finest, the center of all creation, and the knower of everything. Different varieties of philosophical speculators try to reach you. You are the ultimate goal of all philosophical efforts, and it is actually only you who are described by all philosophies and different kinds of doctrines. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto you, because you are the origin of all scripture and the source of knowledge. You are the root of all evidences, and you are the supreme person who can bestow upon us the supreme knowledge. You are the cause of all kinds of desires, and you are the cause of all kinds of satisfaction. You are the Vedas personified, therefore we offer you our respectful obeisances. So they really had a lot of knowledge, these Nagapatnis. Our dear Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, and you are also the Supreme Enjoyer. You have now appeared as the son of Vasudeva, who is the manifestation of the state of pure goodness. You are the predominating deities of the mind and intelligence, Aniruddha and Prajna, and you are the Lord of all Vaishnavas. By your expansion as the Chaturvyuha, Chatur means four, namely Vasudeva Sankarshan, Anuruddha, Aniruddha, and Prajna, usually Vasudeva Sankarshan, Prajna, Aniruddha, it's usually Prajna, Aniruddha, reversed. You are the cause of the development of mind and intelligence. By your activities only, the living entities become covered by forgetfulness or discover their real identity. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter. The Lord is sitting as the super soul in everyone's heart, and due to his presence, the living entity either forgets himself or revives his original identity. That's the famous verse, Matatsmrityur Gyanamapovanam cha. Sarvasya chaham vrisana vishto, Matatsmrityur Gyanamapovanam cha. Vedaischa saveraham evavidyo, Vedanta kud vid eva chaham. What does that verse say? I am Sarvasya Chaham, Rajasana Vishto. I am situated in everyone's heart, and I am giving them intelligence, remembrance, and forgetfulness according to their desire. You know, you want to forget Krishna? Okay, here's intelligence. Here's forgetfulness, so you can forget Krishna. You want to remember? Vidami Buddhi Yogam Tam. So anyway, so by all the Vedas, I am to be known. That's really interesting. And I am the knower of the Vedas. We can partially understand that you are within. Whoops. Whoops. We skipped here. Okay. We can partially understand that you are within our hearts as the witness of all our activities, but it is very difficult to appreciate your presence, although every one of us can do so to some extent. You are the supreme controller of both the material and spiritual energies, therefore you are the supreme leader. Although you are different from this cosmic manifestation, you are the witness and creator and the very ingredient of this cosmic manifestation. We therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Our dear Lord, in the matter of creating this cosmic manifestation, personally you have nothing to exert. By expanding your different kinds of energy, namely the mode of passion, the mode of goodness, and the mode of ignorance, you create, maintain, and annihilate this cosmic manifestation. As the controller of the entire time force, you simply glance over the material energy, thereby creating this universe and energizing the different modes of material nature, which act differently in different creatures. No one can estimate, therefore, how your activities are going on within this world. Our dear Lord, although you have expanded into the three principal deities of the universe, namely Lord Brahma, Lord Vishnu, Lord Shiva, for creation, maintenance, and destruction, your appearance as Lord Vishnu is actually for the benediction of all living entities, creatures. Therefore, for those who are actually peaceful, and who are aspiring after the supreme peace, worship of your peaceful appearance as Lord Vishnu is recommended. So what they're mentioning here is that this whole creation, maintenance, destruction is actually being done without any work on the part of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord simply desires things, that's called aptakama, and it happens. And the Supreme Lord has his agents, his devotees, to carry out the, and his energies to carry out these things. O Lord, we are submitting our prayers to you. You can appreciate that this poor serpent is going to give up his life. You know that for us women, our husband is our life and everything. Therefore, we are praying unto you that you kindly excuse Kaliah, our husband, because it's, if this serpent dies, then we shall be in great difficulty. Looking upon us only, please excuse this great offender. Our dear Lord, every living creature is your offspring, and you maintain everyone. This serpent is also your offspring, and you can excuse him once, although he has offended you undoubtedly without knowing your supremacy. Our dear Lord, we are offering our loving service unto you because we are all eternal servitors of your Lordship. You can order us to do whatever you please. Every living being can be relieved from all kinds of despair if he agrees to abide by your orders. Now notice, they glorified Krishna first, then they made their request. That's the etiquette. After the Nagapatnis submitted their prayers, Lord Krishna released Kaliah from his punishment. Kaliah was already unconscious from being struck by the Lord. Upon regaining consciousness and being released from the punishment, Kaliah got back his life force and the working power of his senses. With folded hands, he humbly began to pray to the Supreme Lord Krishna. My dear Lord, I have been born in such a species that by nature I am angry and envious, being in the darkest region of the mode of ignorance. Your Lordship knows well that it is very difficult to give up one's natural instincts, although by such instincts the living creature transmigrates from one body to another. It is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita that it is very difficult to get out of the clutches of material nature, but if anyone surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the modes of material nature can no longer act on him. Remember that. My dear Lord, Kaliah continued, you are the original creator of the modes of material nature by which the universe is created. You are the cause of the different kinds of mentality possessed by living creatures, by which they have obtained different varieties of bodies. My dear Lord, I am born as a serpent. Therefore, my natural by natural instinct, I am very angry. How is it then possible to give up my acquired nature without your mercy? It is very difficult to get out of the clutches of your Maya. By your Maya, we remain enslaved. My dear Lord, kindly excuse me for my inevitable material tendencies. I surrender unto you. Now you can punish me or save me as you desire. After hearing this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who was acting as a small human child, ordered the serpent thus. You must immediately leave this place and go to the ocean. Leave without delay. You can take with you all your offspring, wives, and everything that you possess. Don't pollute the waters of the Yamuna. Let it be drunk by my cows and coward boys without hindrance. The Lord then declared that the order given to the Kaliah snake be recited and heard by everyone so that no one need fear Kaliah any longer. Anyone who hears, this is actually the benediction at the end of the chapter. It's called Shruti Pala. Anyone who hears the narration of the Kaliah serpent and his punishment will need fear no more the envious activities of snakes. The Lord also declared, if one takes a bath in the Kaliah lake, where my coward boyfriends and I have bathed, or if one fasts for a day and offers the oblations of the forefathers from the water of this lake, he will be relieved from all kinds of sinful reactions. The Lord also assured Kaliah, you came here out of fear of Garuda, who wanted to eat you in the beautiful land by the ocean. Now after seeing the marks where I have touched your head with my lotus feet, Garuda will not disturb you. Actually, the whole story about that. That Kaliah went there because in the Yamuna there was this sage, Shobhari Muni, had cursed Garuda that he couldn't eat any more snakes within the Yamuna River. In this way, Kaliah was safe. And the reason that Shobhari Muni had cursed Garuda that he couldn't eat any more snakes or any fish or anything like that within the Yamuna River was that Shobhari Muni was very attached to his friends, the fish. He wanted to protect fish, and that was sentimental. But because he committed an offense against Garuda, the great bird carrier of the Lord, he developed material desires, and he went to the king, I believe it was Mandata, who had 50 daughters, and he married all 50 of them and just spent a lot, most of his life, just trying to be a good grihastha, you know, instead. And pleasing his wives. Ultimately, he realized this mistake, he was freed from the offense, and he and his wives became Krishna conscious. That's another story. The Lord was pleased with Kali and his wives. Immediately after hearing his order, the snake and his wives began to worship him with great offerings of nice garments, flowers, garlands, jewels, ornaments, sandalwood pulp, lotus flowers, and nice eatable fruits. In this way, they pleased the master of Garuda, of whom they were very much afraid. Then, obeying the orders of Lord Krishna, all of them left the lake within the Yamuna, and they went to Fiji. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purport of the 16th chapter of Krishna, subduing Kaliya. So Prabhupada at one point said Kali is probably in Fiji. And there's a story that they actually worship a god there that looks pretty much like Kaliya looks. And the first time the devotees went to Fiji, and they showed the native Fijians the pictures, or the picture of Kaliya, the native Fijians identified Kaliya as their worshipable deity. It's very interesting. So, that's the story of subduing Kaliya, and it is time, perfect timing. So today we did chapter 16. Okay, so we will stop sharing the screen. Then we will, what we do, allow you to unmute yourselves. All right. You are now allowed to unmute yourselves. So now is the time for questions. You can, Rishikesh is quick on the trigger. So what's up, Rishikesh?
Yes, Gurudev, just a quick question. It seems this Nagapatnis are very, very knowledgeable about Krishna. I was wondering, who is the guru? I mean, is it Brihaspati or Shukracharya?
I don't know. I mean, we'll have to ask them. But, I mean, these Nagas, they're very intelligent creatures. I mean, they're very powerful, intelligent creatures. They're not just like ordinary, you know, snakes and scorpions of this world. I mean, they had the ability, they had mystic powers, they could change their bodies. There's many stories about Nagas. In fact, Arjuna, was it Ulupi, he married a Naga princess. You know that story?
Yes, yeah. Ulupi, right?
What was her name? Was it Ulupi?
Something, Ulupi or something?
Ulupi. He married a Naga princess. He was actually bathing in the Yamuna, and he was pulled down by her. And she just proposed to him, and he gave in. And they got married. That was during the time when he was in exile. And the something like that. That Bhimsen was poisoned one time by Duryodhana and Dushasan and thrown into the river, into the Ganges, and then he sunk down, and the Nagas bit him and actually counteracted the poison and gave him this stuff called Rasakun, which made him more powerful than something like 10,000 elephants. That's a story from the Mahabharata. So, you know, they're definitely very, very powerful creatures. And actually, they're all the sons of Kadru. I mean, that's a story from the Mahabharata, that you have Vinata and Kadru. Vinata is the mother of Garuda, and also the mother of Aruna. And Kadru is the mother of a thousand snakes. It's a lot of kids. And Kali is one of them. And Vasuki is another one. And Shesha, who's an expansion, is another one. It's interesting. Yes, Kashyapa and Vinata and Kashyapa and Kadru. It's very interesting. Very, very interesting.
Are these Nagalokas, they stay in the Earth planet, or they have their own world?
They have their own world, but they can come down to the Earth planet. And there's some sort of like passageway. Like, you know, the scientists talk about that, you know, this passageway through space that they can actually come down or be in the water and do different things. They're powerful living entities. Very, very powerful living entities. So that's it. Okay. Very good. Thank you for your questions. So here's a question from a devotee. Does it mean the defeat of Kali was more glorious than the death of Kamsa? Killing Kamsa was easy, but the fight between Krishna and Kali was quite intense. Actually, it was easy, just as easy for Krishna. All these different fights, defeat, and death of the demons, they're not difficult. Krishna's just playing with them. It's not that Krishna had a hard time. Actually, what Krishna wanted to do was to play with Kali and ultimately liberate him. And so he also wanted to arouse the emotions, you know, just like bring out all the emotions of the Brajavasis in a very intense way. That's how Krishna did it. Didn't Krishna? Krishna doesn't have any trouble killing Gasura, killing Kali, killing all of us. Because as we know from the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Mrityu Sarva Harashchaham, I am all devouring death. So, but Krishna made it intense like that. And also Krishna made the fight between him and Mushtika, Chanura and Mushtika intense too. I mean, kind of killing of Kamsa was really a lot quicker. Krishna actually even dragged his body around just to assure everybody he was dead. But Krishna had more fun. I would say Krishna had more fun dealing with Kaliya than he did with Kamsa. And Kaliya, you know, Kaliya's a devotee. So here's a question. Did Krishna planned Balaram not joining him in the Jamuna, thinking Balaram was been the origin of snakes and might impede him of chastising Kaliya? I don't think so. Because there's good snakes and bad snakes. Like we have good human beings and bad human beings. So just because another living entity is a human being, I don't feel a special mercy towards them. So here's another one. Since Krishna is always Kishore, 16 years old and Goloka, these childhood leelas only happen in Boma, earthly leelas of Krishna. In Goloka, Krishna is always 16. Here, you know, Krishna is Poganda age. So, Krishna appears younger, but there is a Kaliya Leela in Goloka. And exactly what age Krishna appears during that Kaliya Leela is not mentioned in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. But the Kaliya Leela in Goloka is different in the sense that, first of all, Krishna dances with the gopis on the heads of the Kaliya serpent. And secondly, Krishna doesn't kill or send the Kaliya serpent away. He actually uses him like some jet skis. He takes the upper garments from the Nagapatnis and sort of like pierces the noses of the Kaliya serpent's hoods. And in this way, puts the upper garments through there so there's like reins. I think you understand what I mean, reins on a horse. And then he just like, giddy up, and he gives his friends and all the others rides on the Yamuna River. That would be cool. I mean, just like in this world, people like these jet skis. I mean, I never really like that stuff. When I was young, of course we didn't have jet skis when I was young, but when I was young, we had water skiing. And, you know, you get behind the boat and you put these skis on and you just place them so they're slightly up above the water. You hold on to the tow rope and you signal the boat, okay, hit it. And then the boat goes fast and you get up on the water skis and you're going back and forth on the wake of the boat. And, yeah, it was boring. It was quite boring to do. Actually, my experience in this material world is boring. Seen it, been there, done it. So imagine going jet skiing with Krishna on the Kaliya serpent. That would be cool. Why didn't Kali's wife ask for devotion instead of asking Krishna to be merciful and save his life? They already had devotion. But they were chaste to their husbands. You know, I mean, you love someone, that's what you think of. Please, how do we understand that Nagapatnis love their husband who is envious despite of them being pure devotees, and they also prayed for the protection by forgiving so that he can protect them in the future when Krishna is the supreme lightness? Because they understood their husband was protecting them from unscrupulous snakes. You know, we understand Krishna is protecting us, but we still put our seatbelts on. You know, we still have to understand. You know, we can't be so foolish to think that, you know, Krishna will protect us if we act foolishly, because Krishna protects us by giving us proper intelligence. Isn't it? I mean, that's why, you know, there's like, that's why we use an umbrella if it rains. You say, oh, if Krishna's actually there, the rain won't hit my head. But guess what, Prabhu? The rain will hit your head. The material energy acts in a certain way. So they were concerned that they had a peaceful situation in which to enact their devotional service, and they loved their children. Is it their compassion of being practical as they still have kids? And they loved, they're Vaishnavas, you know, they loved everybody, especially they loved their husband. What's wrong with it? You know, I'm trying to be a Vaishnava, and I love my mother. So, here's another word. Please let my humble base, the Lord is present in everyone's heart. Why then don't we see all the same and associate with everyone? Because we're in Maya. Because we don't understand that the Lord is in everyone's heart. We don't see everybody as a temple of God. That's why. It's because of our problem. We're in illusion. We're in Maya. We see some difference. That's, what is that called? Understanding the mode of passion according to Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. So, that's why. Because we're not Krishna conscious. If we're Krishna conscious, we love everybody regardless of natural origin, religion, gender, or not gender, or changing gender, it doesn't matter like that. We love everybody. Okay, just one other question. Abhishek, you have a question, real quick.
Dhanavad Pranam Maharaj, first of all. Haribol. Maharaj, I just have one question very soon. I mean, somewhere I was hearing that about the struggle for existence. Can you hear me, Maharaj?
I can hear you. About the what existence?
Struggle for existence. Okay. So this struggle for existence, is it, I mean, applicable not only with the human beings, but other species of the world?
Oh, of course. There's the either eat or be eaten.
So in regards of that, if any devotee, if somebody becomes a devotee, he doesn't have to be worried for the struggle of existence. But what about the other species? Because who's going to be, because how they become a devotee and how they will be, free out from the struggle for the existence? That's one of my questions.
That's a very good question. Yeah, they become, first of all, a devotee, as far as not worried about the struggle of existence. Yeah, doesn't worry, but he understands he's still in the struggle of existence. Doesn't worry. It's ultimately, it's up to Krishna, and ultimately he's not the body. Yes. That's one point. So in other species of life, they learn by their experiences, which make impressions on the subtle body, which they don't remember consciously, but they experience different things in this world. And ultimately, those experiences culminate in them searching out for the truth in the human form of life. You don't have to remember how you learn something to learn it. I don't remember how I learned to walk. I don't remember how I learned to speak English. I don't remember how I learned to drive a car. So these are impressions on the, sometimes we say subconsciousness within this lifetime, but on the subtle body. So even the living entities and other species of life have impressions on their subtle body. Okay?
Okay. Thank you.
I have to end now because it's time.
Thanks very much, Maharaj. Thanks very much.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you for asking. Nice question. So hopefully we'll have a class tomorrow night. But the next night, Wednesday night, we won't have a class because I have some procedures, these medical procedures. Everybody pray. Tomorrow we may have some, but I'm not sure about it. Okay, thank you very much. All glories to His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda. Ki jai, Prabhupāda ki jai.